email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're broadcasting live from Galway. The film flaw started on Tuesday and continues through till... Sorry, started on Tuesday, continues through till Sunday. And it never fails to bring some Hollywood glamour to the city of tribes. There you go, the answer to the quiz. This year is no different. Last night, the world premiere of a movie starring Matthew Modine took place. It was disrupted, sort of, following the announcement of strike action by US Actors Union SAG-AFTRA. Matthew from Full Metal Jacket, The Dark Knight Rises, Birdie, more recently Stranger Things. He was into Killing Mockingbird in the West End quite recently. He also ran as a SAG-AFTRA presidential candidate in 2019 and again in 2021, so he knows what's going on with the big story of the day, and he joins me now in studio. Good afternoon, Matthew.
Well done. Well done.
How are you?
I'm very chuffed to be here. Very happy to be here.
I'm delighted to see you. I'm delighted to be in your company because I was telling during the week, Birdie left a big impression on me.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it
left a big impression on me.
What impression did it leave on you?
Well, I was really early on in my career, and it was I had done Vision Quest, was I think over here was called Crazy for You. So that was really the big first starring movie I had. I did a movie with Mel Gibson and Diane Keaton called Mrs. Soulful, and then Birdie.
Yeah.
And Alan Parker was a legend in the States. You know, he'd done Bugsy Malone and Midnight Express and Fame. And so that was the movie that every young actor wanted to be a part of. And I auditioned for Nick Cage's part.
Right, because he was your co-star, yeah.
He had to play Al Columbato, and I was up in Toronto doing Mrs. Soulful with Mel Gibson and Diane Keaton, and he rang me up and he said, you know, congratulations, you're going to be in the movie. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're going to be in the movie. I said, oh my gosh, are you going to change the character's name? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, am I going to play Italian-American, or are you going to change his name? Because his character's name was Al Columbato.
Right.
And he goes, no, you're going to play Birdie. Uh-huh. And I said, no, I auditioned for Al. I can't play Birdie. Birdie's this fragile, beautiful, delicate soul. And he goes, no, you're going to play Birdie. You're going to be great.
And you were still quite young. And did that awaken you an interest in what it is to be human?
No question.
Yeah.
No question. There's a line in Harper Lee's book, which before I did the play, I was quite conscious of, that she wrote, that we never really understand another person till we consider their point of view, till we get inside their skin and walk around in it. And that sort of by definition is what actors do. You have to consider another person's point of view and then figure out a way to crawl inside that character and walk around and embody it. And it's...
So Birdie was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had to try and imagine what it's like to be...
To try to get inside that skin. I'm not a religious person, but I was so scared about playing that part. I got on my hands and knees and I begged that everyone who'd ever been mistreated and suffered with some kind of post-traumatic stress to please come and help me play this role. Veterans, you know, please help me to understand this. And I felt like an army full of people climbed inside of me to guide me and help me with that, and which led to a different kind of spiritual kind of consciousness that when we talk about reincarnation, we know now that we've looked inside, that at that time we hadn't decoded DNA, but now that we have, we know that we're related to every living thing that's on this planet. And so when we talk about reincarnation, that it's very possible and quite logical to say that we are the embodiment of all those people that came before us. And so when we have aspirations to do something, when we have an instinctual desire to do something, that we may be fulfilling a desire and ambition of one of those ancestors that came before us.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
That it's living right there inside of you and helping you and guiding you and sometimes maybe misinforming us.
Yeah, I'll have to take that away with me now.
Yeah,
I have a 2.5 hour drive back to Dublin, so I'll be thinking about that on the way back. Well, it's become a big story over here now, the strike, because it's historic in that the last time the writers and the actors were out on strike together was 1960.
It's been some time.
Yeah, 63 years ago. So it's big news. Mm. So why now?
Well, The big simple answer is artificial intelligence, especially for the writers, because they can, with ChatGP and these kind of writing programs, you can enter a certain set of circumstances, and the computer will, using scripts from the past, from everything from Casablanca to Indiana Jones, and throw in some Mission Impossible, and give me a character that has a sassy sense of humor, like Jim Carrey. And the computer will amalgamate all.
So that's writers. But are the actors going out in solidarity with the writers, or have they got their own grievances?
We were in solidarity with the writers, and now we are standing alone because of residuals, of participation, the diminishing residuals. And that began all the way back with VHS tapes, and then DVDs, and then with streaming, with cable networks. Because the producer said, this is a new technology. People have to buy VHS tapes. Stores have to be set up. So give us a break. And we did. And then the DVDs came along and they said, this is a new machine. Give us a break. And we did. And then with cable, they said, you know, people have to buy subscriptions.
Give
and
us
the
break.
Cables, and cables have to be run. Give us a break. And we did. And each way along the way, once those things were established, the break was never repaired. And they were taking advantage and making billions of dollars.
And just for our listeners, residuals are where actors get a little fee or a big fee when something's reshown.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you would have been looking for a little bit, a cent or two for every VHS that was sold.
Exactly.
DVD, da-da-da.
Yeah.
Now we have streaming. So how does residuals work with streaming?
Streaming is buyouts.
Is it right?
It's a buyout.
There's no residuals.
Yeah, because the people that really created streaming are people from the tech world. And what the tech people want to do is own the IP, which is intellectual property. Mm. So it's kind of like if Basquiat were alive today and painting pictures and sold one for $500 and then it's worth $15 million today, that artist who created the painting would never be able to enjoy the success of the work
artwork. For example, you're in Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. And that's shown all over the world. You know that because you're recognized all over the world. Mm-hmm. And you just got a flat fee.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how successful that is, how popular it is, how many eyes fall on it.
Yeah, they call it a prepaid residual.
Okay. Well, it's not a residual then, is it really?
It works in your favor if the show's not successful.
If it's rubbish, yeah.
Yeah, if it's rubbish, then you got a prepaid residual.
Yes,
you got
okay,
a little bonus.
Yeah, yes.
But if it's a success like Stranger Things, for your listeners, it's important to know that, so let's say one of the most successful films and known films of mine is Full Metal Jacket.
Mm. Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah. And so in 1986, when it came out, if that film was successful in 60 territories, 60 countries around the world, that would be a phenomenal success. Netflix is in over 190 territories around the world. And so the children from Stranger Things, when season one came out, they were famous so fast and in a way globally that has never existed in the history of the entertainment industry. That the marketplace for merchandising of toys, of lunchboxes, of T-shirts, it's a gazillion dollars. And a kind of fame that never existed in the history of the industry.
So Millie Bobby Brown just got a flat fee.
Uh-huh.
Compare that to, say, Macaulay Culkin for Home Alone. Would he still be getting residual checks now?
He would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
They there is a sliding curve.
Yes,
you know,
they
do diminish over time.
Yeah.
But
that doesn't seem fair.
No. And so it goes through a cycle of, you know, there's the first year, the second year, the third year, the fourth year, when they're selling the rights. And then they can be sold into, I forget what it's called, but like for the kids from Friends, not only were they paid millions of dollars per episode for doing the show, then they had the residuals and went through that cycle.
So they're okay, is what you're saying.
They're very okay.
Now, the other aspect is, and I know you said that AI affects writers, but it also affects actors. So if you put your headphones on, right?
Yeah.
Now, I did this last night. I've been doing it with a few of our guests over the last while because I'm fascinated by sound and I'm fascinated by voice cloning and I'm fascinated about the future. So have you ever recited the lyrics of Careless Whisper by Wham?
Never.
Never. Okay, rightio. Well, have a listen to this.
I'm never going to dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm. Though it's easy to pretend, I know you're not a fool. I should have known better than to cheat a frame and to waste the chance that I'd been given. So I'm never going to dance again the way I danced with you.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow. It even had the kind of hesitation, the way I'm stumbling to try to say something now, that it is able to...
How do you feel listening to that? That's you saying things you never said before.
Yeah, this is not only frightening politically of what, you know, remember when Orson Welles did War of the Worlds and people in America, I don't know if it happened.
They thought it was real,
They thought it was real and they were running out in the streets and going crazy because they thought the world was being attacked by aliens. That you could, you know, Joe Biden could go on fake Joe Biden and say that we're going to war with Russia and cause all kinds of chaos until people realize that it wasn't true.
And that's very serious and it's doable. But from your point of view as an actor, they could decide change it slightly. And for an animation, they can have you as a voice actor.
Well, that's where I was going to say was for this has a tremendous financial impact on not just the actors, but the contributions that those actors would make to the union in health and pension contributions and initiation fees and dues. So immediately animation, it's wonderful having Jack Black do the voice of a panda in a show. But you can, as you just heard, recreate Jack Black and not have to pay residuals and not have to pay a big salary to get him to do the voiceover. So that's gone. Mm. That animation is gone. Television commercials where you, that's how I'm able to supplement my income doing voiceovers for television commercials. I do a bank commercial.
It could be gone if your voice isn't protected. Yeah,
I don't think they'd ever hire an actor again to do it. Right. They just create somebody that sounds like Matthew Modine.
Here's the irony, right? I think this is irony anyway. Yesterday, while I was following the story, I clicked onto a video talking about actors or writers giving out and placards and all about AI and residuals, and the report was done by
a computer.
Yes.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah, and it's breakneck speed, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, television commercials, you won't need them.
So this is serious. This is existential, isn't it, really?
It is. So you can't put that AI monster back in the box.
No, you can't. No,
you can't.
No.
And if we did, if we did in the West, if we said we're going to try to regulate it, India, China, you know, different countries would continue running down the road unregulated and get so far ahead of us. I don't know that the West would ever be able to catch up.
So let's go back to sort of the philosophical question about what it is to be human and what you bring to the table as an actor, like, you know, soul, heart, emotion.
Yeah.
Although that's quite convincing what I played there. I'm just going to play a little bit of it again because like the human emotion seems to be there.
It seems
I'm
to
never
be
gonna
there.
Dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm. Though it's easy to pretend. I know you're not a fool. I should have known better than to cheat a friend.
I should have known
waste
better.
Waste the chance that
I should have known better.
So I'm never going to dance.
I'm never going to dance. Yeah. Like that's at the lower end. That was a free app. 30 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Free?
Free.
And you said you typed in Matthew
Modine. No, I didn't. I went on and I found an interview that you did with Seth Meyer. And I took Seth Meyer out of it and the laughing. And whenever you went, you know, and I just had 2 minutes of you then talking and put it in.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was something on the Netflix show. They brought me into a room that had cameras, 360-degree cameras.
This is for Stranger Things.
On Stranger Things. Yeah. And there were about, I don't know, it felt like there were about 400 cameras.
Yeah.
And they said, don't move, hold your arms a certain way and stand with your legs a certain way. And they did it season one and they did it season four. They never explained to me what it was. I thought maybe there's some stunt that I have to do, and so they want to be able to put my face on something. Mm. I may have signed something in my contract that says that they own
you,
me,
your image. Yeah,
yeah.
Like Bruce Willis has signed over his visuals.
Mm-hmm.
What's the guy?
Tom Hanks said that he's willing. He thinks it's great that he'll be able to create his intellectual property of Tom Hanks and be able to market
and live, sit at home,
live in perpetuity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's doing a movie on it, I think, that's coming out later in the year. Sorry, I'm not, not allowed to mention movies that are coming out later in the year. No, sorry, I'm joking. but the movie, the unmentionable movie, which I saw, which is brilliant, you do a lot of running in it. You also, it's filmed in Ireland. Ireland looks amazing in it.
Yeah, we're in Limerick.
Yeah.
And the Cliffs of Moher.
Yeah. Moher.
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 Excuse me, thank you.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. Although you've just created an image there in my head, the cliffs covered in moher. But it's Cliffs of Moher. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And I can say, you can't say it, but you play a film director who may be God. And your terminal, what's the terminal or something? And then
terminal.
Terminal. It's more than there's an extra syllable on it, or the finality. Anyway, you're dying. But there's a number of scenes where you run, and you run majestically.
Oh, thank you.
You're a very graceful runner.
Oh,
Did you know that? You've seen yourself running before on screen.
Yeah,
obviously.
I've done a lot of running in movies before. Yeah, and I think it helped that. Because I was playing a film director, I thought I picked my favorite director, Fellini and Charlie Chaplin and John Huston. So I had kind of a John Huston voice. I hope I'm not promoting the show because I'll get thrown out of the
unit. No, you're not. We'll stop it there. But you did mention running, and another actor that's famous for running is Tom Cruise. Mm. And I'm bringing this because you famously refused the part in Top Gun.
Yeah. Yeah,
How do you feel about that now?
Oh, I feel just as strongly about it as I did when I went. It's because I'd gone to East Berlin. I went to the Berlin Film Festival with that movie I mentioned before with Mel Gibson and Diane Keaton called Mrs. Sofel. And they said, do you want to go into East Berlin? I said, I can't go to East Berlin. I'm American. And they said, no, you can because you are. The Berliners can't go to East Berlin. I said, yeah, I want to go to East Berlin. So they took me across Checkpoint Charlie. And I'd been growing up in Utah and Southern California. And I discovered on that trip that the Nazis were fighting the Russians. Now, I never got taught that in school. I mean, probably in Ireland and Great Britain and European, they knew because you were more aware of it, of this aspect.
They were fighting on two fronts.
Yeah. And that millions of Russians had died fighting the Nazis. And I hadn't been taught that in school. The only thing they ever talked about Russians were bad, better dead than red and things. And when I discovered that because they brought me to this monument for the millions that had died. And I met Russian soldiers and they gave me pins from their uniforms. I smoked at the time and I gave them some American cigarettes and they could speak English and I couldn't speak any Russian. And I thought these guys are no different than my brothers that went to Vietnam. And when I came back, that was the script that was waiting for me, Top Gun. And I felt that it was perpetuating a lie. But more important that as long as we use violence to solve our problems, as long as we keep beating each other up and say, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm smart, you're stupid, we're not going... We are apex creatures on the planet, but we still have a long way to evolve to be more like the animals that live on the planet that don't destroy it. And I think it's so important that we've stopped behaving like this other movie that I have coming out, using bombs to solve our problems, to using guns to solve our problems. That it's not the solution.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately.
No, probably not in our lifetime, but I can hope. And so what I don't want to do is participate in a film that's kind of war pornography, that makes it look sexy and fun. And
when we're on about Tom Cruise, there are a number of producer actors or actor producers. Mm-hmm. So they're straddling the divide, if you like. Mm-hmm. Will Ferrell produces Succession. Reese Witherspoon, there's an awful lot of people who are producers as well as actors. Mm-hmm. How do they navigate what's going on at the moment? You can't speak for them, obviously, because
I think that they just have to. They're probably not very happy about it, and they're living in such a different realm, though that. It's important for your listeners to know that about 90% of the union are paycheck to paycheck. That there's 160,000 members of SAG-AFTRA, And most of them are journeymen, or journey women, journey people. I don't know how you say that. That are living paycheck to paycheck, and residuals really mean something to them. And another aspect of the strike is self-taping. They used to go to, used to go in to meet a casting director, and the casting director.
Oh yeah, you have to do the audition on your phone.
Yeah, you do it on your phone and you send it in, and it's. I may not have a career if I had to do that today to self-tape, because now you have to be your own director, you have to be your own critic, you know, your own lighting person, sound person, to present, to make a good presentation, to audition for a film.
The biggest vote in favor of strike ever in the union, so people feel very strongly about it. How long could it last? And when will us as consumers? When will it affect us?
Well, there's a lot of movies that are stockpiled that they can continue to release. There's enough. I don't like the word content, but that's the word that they use because it. I think it devalues what we do, calling it content. It just sounds like something you like stuff in a hole. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff to keep people entertained for a while. But I believe that it could be as short as 2 weeks, and it could be as long as 2 months. I don't think it would go longer than that.
What we can promote is your masterclass in acting. Do you feel weird being asked to do that? Or
I don't like the word masterclass. It sounds really pretentious, and I think it's better to call it a chat, you know, to have a conversation and let people ask me questions about how to navigate a career in the industry, you know, to be able to help people. I don't know that you can teach someone to be an actor, but I think that you can help people to become better human beings. And when you help people to become better human beings, there's no shortage or no need. What am I trying to say? We certainly need, the world needs good people.
Yes, it does. But not all actors are good people.
I think you seem very definite on that one. yeah. We have to try to be better people, though. And so, if we can have a discussion where it's a conversation that if I told you this is the best way to cook a piece of corn, and you said, "Well, actually, have you ever tried grilling it?" You know, I'm trying to talk you into steaming it. I say, no, you don't grill. If I just said you're stupid, you don't grill corn, you steam it. And instead of saying, I've never grilled corn, let's sit down and taste it and decide if one's better than the other or if they're both good.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's just in America that it's really gotten to this place where it's just polarized, it's binary.
Yeah, well, you know what's to blame for that? It's these things.
That doesn't help.
No, it's the mobile phone and
social media
and AI and algorithms, and they like a bit of a war, a bit of a row, draws people in, and they get more eyes on screens, and that's the way the world's working. So, on such time as we destroy every smartphone in the world, we're gonna that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, so I wouldn't call it a masterclass. I'd just call it a chat.
Well, I loved that chat, and I'd love to chat to you again. And enjoy the rest of your time at the Film Fla in Galway, and I hope everything works out in the strike. Matthew Modine, thank you so much. Thanks for coming.
I appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.